Blog Talk Radio.
In the stillness, we hear our mother's voice. Like a dream, she say, break through the concrete, escape those bleak streets, and finally feel the soft soil beneath your feet. Expose my living skin to the sun and the air, and be prepared. Great change is coming soon. With your touch, I can heal my wounds if you just allow me to breathe. We will weave with this greenness the great blanket of peace. Break through the asphalt encasing your heart. Embark on the path of courage. Nothing's gonna stop you. Be bold for all that you hold dear. No fear. Let go and rewild your soul. All you need is around you in abundance of love. You are blessed beyond measure from below and above. Just follow the map. It's written you in every leaf. See, we stem from each other, my friend. You complete me. Work isn't work. Your hands in the earth. And rest is so sweet when you bring life to birth. Chase the flight of the floating weed seed. Hum along to the song of the humble bumblebee. Follow the branches that ground the light. Nourish in the dirt, though they point to the sky. Gaze at the clouds as they drift by. Tumble with the tide each day like you were baptized. Be reminded that you are a wild child. So dance with the shadow of the swaying trees. Fall with the rain, roll with the waves. Believe, pause to reflect on the stillness of a lake. Every ripple saying, we are one and the same. Trace your fingers along the veins of a leaf. You are a branch of this family, a most incredible creature. Close your eyes, find your path. See that life is a cycle. Every ending brings a fresh start. A season shift and colors change. Die to the past. Embrace each new day. Listen to me. Listen to me with your heart. Embark on the path of courage. Nothing's gonna stop you. Listen to me. Listen to me with your heart. Be bold for all that you hold dear. No fear, let me breathe if you love me. Breathe, breathe. You are blessed beyond measure from below and above. Let me breathe if you love me. Breathe, breathe. Let go, rewild your soul. Protect me as your kin. See, hear, feel, you know where to begin again. Allow me to recover and thrive. Revive the tribe and we can move into the future as one. My daughters, my sons. She say that every other species is doing its part and we came here to shine a way through the darkness. She says our freedom is assured. We're the ones that we're waiting for. So what takes flight? See the cage left open. Make a break for it. Reject, lay, return away from hatred. Maybe we were chained. Gain strength from our mistakes. Move beyond civilization. We saw life at stake. I won't simply sit back. Watch the planet ravage man. Drowning in the sea. Still clinging to my baggage. I can't be weighed down. I release my regret. Move with the moment as living spirit. Fuse the flesh. If not you, who? If not now, when? You've been bashed, bruised and broken, ain't beaten yet, my friend. So be bold for all that you hold dear. No fear, then let go. Rewild your soul.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us at the Wise Women Media, the radio show. And that was the voice of the wonderful Emma Carroll, also known as Earthling MC from Sydney, Australia. She'll be joining us in a few minutes. I wanted to make sure that you all know how to find us on the web. We're at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. On that blog page, you will find a list of our sponsors. We want to especially reach out to Here Be Monsters that gives us this hour and a half for broadcasting every week. Our other sponsors are Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodooed blog. And we are, Here Be Monsters is a project, or included with the project, the Common Project Network. So we want to also reach out to them. On the blog page, wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, you will also find our GoFundMe link. Please don't hesitate to drop a little money there. That keeps us going with new shows every week. This is independent media. We do not have any corporate sponsorship, so we depend on our listeners to fund us. You'll also find links to our social networks. We're on Facebook, Twitter. We have a Facebook group, and you'll find us on the blogs here and also on hoodooed.blogspot.com. Very, very interesting how Emma and I came to be connected, but we'll talk a little bit about that once I introduce her. I see her in the queue, so let me bring her on. Hi, Emma. Are you with me?
Hello there. Yes, I sure am.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I looked over some of the videos, and I was just so impressed, but that rewilding was just amazing. It was almost like a prayer, and I just absolutely loved it. But I wanted to give you a chance to kind of tell us how this whole thing, how this whole persona became born, how you started putting all of this together and performing it, and fill us in a little bit about you and where you live in Australia.
Well, I live south of Sydney, Australia, a beautiful part of the country. It has a beautiful escarpment and the beach right here. And it's an interesting area because it has a lot of natural beauty, but then it also has a lot of industrial activity. And it seems like there's sort of a big divide there between the sort of, like, there's, it creates this interesting dynamic where there's a lot of people who love nature and they're so connected and amazed by what's around here. And then also the sort of the really heavy industrial thing seems to create a lot of very active, very passionate activists in the area as well. So there's kind of a split in the community between those people who see the need for the jobs and the industrialism and then the people who are trying to maintain this beautiful area. I've only just moved here, and the We Earthling concept, which I've carried on as I moved here, stem from my fascination and great love for small little earthlings. So it's about the We Earthling idea is it actually started as an idea stemming from my love of plankton. I got very interested and fascinated by plankton.
And the plankton, it's necessary for all life. You have to have that.
Exactly.
So that's pretty profound there.
Well, I'm fascinated by the idea that these tiny little creatures are such a fundamental part of all life on Earth, and that they are a microcosm of the greater picture of the Earth itself and of the cosmos, mm-hmm. in a way. So that the entire foundation of life could be reliant on the most tiny little guys in the food chain just really tickled my fancy, and that was where the name was born. But I also think that children are such a fundamental part of our of what we need to be, like how we raise our children, how we let them express themselves, and is just such a really important thing going forward to create a new society in the more beautiful world that we know is possible.
Wow. So this has become the underlying theme of your work, but yet you're basically saying that you work with children, but I know you work with adults too. So how do you transcend that whole idea of working with children and put it more on a more adult level?
Well, I think we're all big kids, really. That's my theory. In a way, the We Earthling was a way to liberate myself because it gave me a theme to work within for my art. I have a bit of a, and I'm sure a lot of artists have the same thing where You have the spider webby brain where your mind goes off in so many different tangents, and it actually creates a certain amount of freedom to bring it back and have the theme there. And so the Wee Earthling thing, it helped me because it gave me some restrictions. For example, like, so the as you talked about the persona, the kind of this really gentle character that I try to bring out in a lot of my films, is so I want the films to be child friendly and family friendly, but also to also speak to adults on the level. So I try to bring in some humor into the work, some character play, some word play, some subtle jokes that maybe the kids won't get. They might be laughing at the visual, but the adult can still connect on the level of the underlying humor, or the message is still
right
there and strong for adults.
So the question that I have is what was the catalyst that brought all this together? Was there some kind of profound moment where all of this was hatched and created?
I always had a very strong connection to animals.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, I watched a lot of nature documentaries, and I would spend hours learning about these incredible, interesting, amazing creatures that were out there in the world, and I would just feel totally amazed and astonished about existence because I would learn about these creatures and how they lived. And it seemed like after every single one of those documentaries, they would talk about how that gorilla or that whale or that, you know, little tiny creature in the undergrowth of the forest was actually under threat because of deforestation, or that their habitat was being somehow destroyed. And that actually bred in me this misanthropy, is that a word? I suddenly was becoming slightly misanthropic, because it seemed to me that humans were this destructive force. We were taking without giving back. We were basically not respecting anything that was already here and just taking for our own purposes. And I never really had the human perspective on it. I never really understood that actually, also, there's a good deal of humans on the planet who are also facing the same oppression and repression and destruction. And actually, a really pivotal moment for me was when I was about 12 years old, and I learned about this little boy who had been a child slave. His name was Iqbal Masai, and he had escaped from child slavery and had made an incredible impact on the collective consciousness, in that he had done talks at the UN. He had made himself very public in a very brave way. And he'd gone back to his homeland of Pakistan and had been shot, this little 12-year-old boy. And we were the same age at the time. And
wow.
I was really moved by his story. And for me, that was a really pivotal, critical sort of awakening moment. And I'd tried to talk to my friends about that and been totally shut down. And I'd, you know, talk to them about global, you know, how humans were destroying the planet and stuff, and been shut down as well. And I guess that was like this, as you're talking about, like I call it a holy shift moment. So it was a moment
that
I
decided. Yeah, well, that's a great way, you know, term for it, because I think we all have those. So the little boy was from Pakistan. And if I look him up, would I be able to find information out about him, or is this something that they've pretty much scrubbed away like it didn't exist?
He was killed in, he was 12 years old when he died, and you can, if you look up Iqbal, I-K-B-A-L, you'll find him for sure. He was, at the time, it did make the news, and that's how I heard about it as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember turning to my parents and saying, you know, now we know about this child slavery, surely something's going to happen about it, right? And they sort of had to turn to me and say, look, we've known about this for ages and it's still going on. And I was just like, what? You guys, like, why isn't the entire, you know, planet mobilized to try to stop this kind of thing happening? We can't just be accepting that kind of behavior. But, yeah, so...
It's like the innocence of youth, you know, you think that if people know about it, they can stop it. But, you know, another wise woman said to me, which was interesting, she said, well, now that you know about this particular issue, well, now you have to be responsible to be part of the change regarding and revolving around that issue. So,
yes.
It's almost like, you know, it's a tremendous burden to activists when they know all of these things and then they feel, you know, powerless. You know, we can get on the streets and we can protest and we can write to our leaders and there's a myriad of things that we can do, but at times feeling so powerless because even most of the people that you speak to about these things look at you like you have two heads and like you're like you're a downer. So taking these positive steps after the holy shift is a way to turn that around and actually be the change, because I'm telling you, I've been burdened lately about issues here like fracking and things like that. I know that Australia is going through some tremendous environmental changes and a lot of injustices. Can you fill us in on exactly what's happening there? I know there's uranium mining. I've heard about the Kimberley. There's a whole, you know, pretty much the same issues that are happening here. But what are paramount in your area? What's happening in your area?
In our area, something I feel is just as bad as fracking, but hasn't had the same kind of exposure, is called longwall mining, or very amazingly, it's actually called undermining. So they're undermining our beautiful escarpment here. So it basically means they make huge holes, chasms, sink these massive machines down into the holes that they've created, and the machine goes along underneath the surface of the earth and mines that way. Called
right.
Undermining, so everyone's kind of waiting for the moment that it all caves in, but this doesn't, like, sort of, I think that whole out of sight, out of mind thing is something that the industrial complex is really playing on, so no one can see this happening until something like a swamp goes dry because all of the water kind of flows into the hole that they've created underneath the swamp or the lake. They're actually doing
right.
this in the Sydney water catchment. So there was a lot of, last year there was a lot of, in the last previous years there's been water shortages and everyone talked about, you know, oh, drought and stuff. It's actually not just that. It's not just that there's a water shortage. The water is being purposefully taken away from this undermining. I have a really strong opinion, or not an opinion, but a personal approach to some of these things. I haven't to this point anyway, and I'm sure if something happened right near me that I would get really involved. I try not to get too caught up in the individual problems, that we're facing, because I feel like that is just so overwhelming, like, to my spirit and to just everything.
Right.
I try to look at the overall picture that we're and the patterns. So I like permaculture as an approach to solving environmental issues and social justice issues. And
I've been studying permaculture myself, and I've been doing online with a course, and of course been reading about it for several years now, and I think that that's the answer. But to get everybody here in the United States, in this particular area, I just don't think enough people have had it rough yet. There's a lot of people that don't have the futuristic vision to know what's coming and to prepare for it. And I think permaculture is knowing what we need to do and preparing for it. Like, you know, taking your backyard, which could be half an acre, and making a garden, you know, enough to live on, enough for your family to live on. But I don't think enough people here have had it rough enough yet.
It's even worse in Australia. I'd say,
really?
Yes, because we're such a young country, and that's I think that's the reason for the sort of wholesale environmental destruction that's going on at the moment. It's just like I talk about it as like a liquidation sale. It's like we have all of these resources, and it's just like sell everything. We're sort of the land is under attack on every front, and I agree. Mm-hmm. It's partly because people haven't felt they haven't felt the full impact of the environmental issues that are going on. Where I was going with the permaculture thing is that permaculture, one of the principles of permaculture is look from patterns to details. So I feel like that's really important and powerful for activists, and knowing where to apply your gifts in creating environmental change and social justice is to look from the pattern, the big picture, to the detail. So we have this society that's not working with the environment whatsoever. It's totally, I feel like it's actually at war with the environment. So this certain civilization, a certain culture, has declared war on the natural environment and is using all of the natural environment's resources to build its own power for now with no vision of the future.
Exactly. I don't know if you heard about it in Australia, but, you know, we had one particular state in West Virginia that just recently, they've had water issues for years because they're doing the mountaintop removal to remove the coal.
Wow.
And one of the chemicals used to clean the coal, which doesn't even have its contents listed on its safety data sheet, was spilled into the Elk River, which is in the capital of West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia. And 300,000 people's water source was affected. And basically what the governor of the state just recently has said is that the people are on their own. And I'm saying to myself, these are people that, you know, they won't even be able to sell their properties. If they own properties, they can't sell them. If they're poor, they can't move, and there's people have already been hospitalized from the toxins in the water, hundreds of people.
Wow.
And now it's not even a blip on the radar as far as the media goes. So the media here is very controlled about, you know, what they want us to listen to and what they want us to hear. And that brings us into another question. Why do you choose to make media convey the message? What exactly do you use to do that? And let me expound on that even more. And how do you put into all of that the social networking?
Well, I think that one of our jobs now as social change agents is is creating a new story for humanity, really. We are storytellers, and we have to help people create such a vision, a vivid image in their minds, a vivid vision in their minds of a potential future that those people can, you know, fill in the color and the detail in their own way, and therefore
right.
believe it so much that we can actually bring it to existence in the real world. One of my recent poems was about, like I sort of start the poem saying, I can see the future and you help to create it. So we have to make people so excited about the potential future that that we can actually bring it into being. You know, any motivational speaker will tell you, you know, in order to achieve anything, you have to have a picture in your head. You have to, and it has to be really detailed. It has to have every little, you know, nook and cranny kind of filled in with this amazing life to the picture. And therefore, Australian Aboriginals have a term for it. They actually talk about the dreaming. They talk about existence and how we're living as this is the dreaming. We are dreaming all this, and we're dreaming it into existence, and everything that we experience is part of this dream. So if we can actually put energy into a positive vision for the dream, and then we can absolutely bring it to life. That's my belief. And I think that humans are so creative and so amazing that anything we imagine, we can create in real life. And so it's about creating that vision of reconnection to nature, working with nature, mm-hmm. that we are part of nature, and that we are these incredible little, you know, little pieces of the earth come to life, and that we have every right to defend ourselves against the machine of industrialism, we are infinitely creative, just like nature is.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No,
it's interesting that our Native Americans here, our indigenous peoples, your indigenous call it the dreaming, and our indigenous people call it the dream time. So it's similar.
The dream time, it's the same, yes.
It's amazing that it's almost the same term. I think that's the key to everything, is what is it you envision, and can you make that happen? And intention is a big part of that too. When you intend something, and you're envisioning and intending, then you become that social change agent. I love that term. I think that's great. So when we can do that, when we can see all that in our mind's eye, then we're already creating the change. We're already half there. My friend, a friend of mine, she's planting her garden in the spring. She lives further north from me, so here we plant pretty much all year round except summer here in Florida, but she's in North Carolina. She said she's going to put every seed in the ground this spring, and she's going to say revolution with every seed that she puts
revolution.
In the ground. She's just going to intend it. And this is just about seeds, you know, and she wants peaceful revolution. So she figured, well, if I put seeds in the ground, that's pretty peaceful. So I thought, wow, that's pretty intense. So
I think that's beautiful.
You know,
yeah,
I just thought, wow, that's really amazing. So now you were talking about creativity and how to make things happen. What if a person is hearing this and they say, "I'm really not creative"? What do you say to those people, and how would they? I'm a firm believer that everybody's got creativity in them, and it just needs to be brought out born because of a catalyst moment. But of course, there's different mediums that people work with. What would be some ways that people that don't think they're creative can become creative? Are there exercises or meditation? What is it they would do to make that happen?
I absolutely agree with you that every individual is creative. We all stem from the planet, which is infinitely creative. And I agree that some people are potentially, it's just about breaking down barriers for them, and that maybe they've put up, like, even that thought, even that idea, I'm not creative, is a barrier that needs to be tackled.
Right.
I think it would be easy to argue with any individual if you knew them, and that you could point out, hang on, no, you are creative. Look at this and this and this that you do, that you create things. I was actually having that discussion with someone, and they, you know, I said, what is your art? What do you like to bring into the world? And he couldn't answer me. And I pushed him on it, and he said, well, I'm a counselor, so I suppose, you know, that's my art, that's my creative thing. I was like, yes, like pinned him down on that. Like, I was like, absolutely, like that's such a, you have to be so creative, and you have to be connected and turned on to the person that you're interviewing. You have to, there's so many ways that is a creative expression and it's so powerful. Some of the things that I like to do, and some of the things I actually did before coming on the show, is taking a moment to reconnect to your body. So going outside, rolling around on the grass, trying to be attuned to the animal side of you. I know that sounds weird.
Right.
But it's about, so I think that a lot of people, and a lot of women especially, maybe, I'm not sure, because I am one, but I can't speak for men, but have this sort of a barrier that about being very intellectual, being very caught up in your mind. And I think it's added to by the sort of the technological mode that we're in at the moment, so a lot of social networks and that sort of thing as a way of connecting.
Right.
So if you're in a too intellectual space, then it can be hard to be creative, because you're double, like, you're questioning everything. You're like, and I actually struggle with that. So some of the ways, another way of breaking through is to challenge yourself. Say, for example, I did a little challenge for myself, post an idea every day, one idea each day. And so I gave myself a deadline. You have one day, and you have to come up with something. So
somebody came up with it was a book and a journal. I can't remember the author's name. I'll have to post it on the blog after we get done talking. But it was a book on expressing creativity, and then it was a journal, like a separate volume where you could actually write. And it encouraged all kinds of interesting play, you know, just personal play.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and it was just so, it was really a profound book, and I haven't seen it on the bookshelves recently, so I'm wondering if it's out of print. But I'll try to post it, and, you know, I like to promote those things, because those do help those hardcore people that have that shell around them that can't seem to break out of that.
Absolutely.
That's really, really interesting. What do you say to the old practices, like some of these older practices that I'm mentioning, like just simple exercise or yoga or meditation? Is this a part of your daily practice, and what is it that you do, and do you encourage others to do it?
I sure do. I practice. I've never done yoga, but I make up my own yoga. So I just get into a space where I can sort of, actually, it's kind of more like dance, but it's sort of dance and poses. flowing in together. I make it not so that I'm like in an uncomfortable or a position that where I'm hurting, but where I can feel myself elongating and like growing in a way. So I push the boundaries of my physicality by through movement. I also do martial arts and parkour, which is it is sort of a martial art as well. It's another art of movement, and it's about exploring your environment and how to move through your environment. So you might have seen some of the videos of like people running and jumping across buildings and sort of doing these. They look incredible, but they're actually quite simple, and you can start you can start small and build up to them. But jumping over things and that kind of stuff, it's all great. It's all wonderful. And I think it is an individual, the barriers that we face are individual barriers. So some people have barriers to do with verbal expression. Some have barriers to do with physical expression. And I'd say, like, if you've grown up in this culture, maybe we all have a little bit of each, but it's about identifying where your barriers are, and really challenging yourself on those. One thing I really recommend is hanging out with children. Children are absolutely on the scale of creativity. Little kids are just out there. They're totally out there with what they say, with how they express their physicality. They're not worried about nudity. They're not worried about like making inappropriate jokes or any of that kind of thing, or like pointing out things that is just true and that no one else seems to see. But little kids, they're really absolutely liberated in a creative, expressive kind of way.
It's like they become, if you're with them long enough, they become fonts of wisdom. Like you think you're teaching them, but they end up teaching you. It's really a marvelous interplay. And I love them. I've never had my own children, so I always appreciate the time that I can spend with somebody else's child. It's usually very limited, amazing little minds and emotions and completely free. They're like, there's nothing to hinder them. That's
absolutely
what's so amazing. Tell us about rewilding and what exactly that means to you. I know we spoke a little bit about permaculture, but what about rewilding the places that need to be rewilded, and how that pertains to people too?
Yeah, well, I guess the first place that needs rewilding is inside us. So
right.
That's what I feel like. So there's a lot of symbolic things that I see, little examples that are like the plankton, so a little microcosm of the big picture. But some of the microcosms of the big picture that I see in industrial culture, consumer culture, or civilized culture are things like using concrete. So it's
right.
This sort of insatiable desire for things to be the same, for everything to be level and right angles and boring and gray, and wanting everything to be controlled, and in a way I feel like it's this desire for immortality this culture is bringing into existence through its activity in the outside world. Rewilding is about getting in touch with the wild nature of humans, that maybe we have all this technology and we have these built environments that are very sterile and dull and controlled, but at heart, humans are still wild animals, and that we need to be in touch with that idea in order to be healthy, to have a really healthy psychology in order to be physically healthy. So rewilding is about, so you can rewild people and places. And
right.
I think that we learn, like we were talking about, a lot, we can learn a lot from Indigenous cultures and Indigenous wisdom about how they inhabited the earth without trying to control it. They were actually walking together with the earth and actually benefited the earth by their very presence. The practice
there was a reciprocation between the Indigenous, no matter where they came from, your country, my country, you know, other places on the globe. There was an interchange. There was a reciprocation when something was taken from the land, something was replaced back to the land. And how much of this would you say interplays and really works with healing, just planetary healing, personal healing? It sounds to me like it's a lot of the same, taking us back to the way we were, to rewild us again, but also to heal us from this damaging culture that we're, you know, we're walking. I don't know about you, but I don't consider myself a part of it. I consider myself walking through it on both sides, but I don't consider myself a part of it.
I think that's really, I think that's absolutely true, what you said about healing, because, it is this unnatural state that we're inhabiting, and it's about reclaiming health, reclaiming our wild nature and our true nature. I definitely believe that's true. And it's definitely not just about a set of skills that we acquire. You know, I know medicinal plants, or that I know, you know, how to track animals or any of those. It's like the skills are important, but actually it's a way of being. It's a way of living. It's about, like you said, reciprocation. It's about acknowledging that our existence is a gift from the planet, and that we set a very strong intention that we will play our part in the healing of the planet as well.
Right. Yeah, because as long as we don't become so engrossed in the consumer culture, it's really a it's more of a culture of death and dead things that I see. It's just, you know, the plastic is dead. The things that we buy in the store are dead. Even the food is dead, you know. And to me, when you're walking through it, it's more about a lifestyle, a life change. It's about life. So you can look at those other things all around you and not partake of those things. And that's what I try to do, is just like move through it, go with the flow and walk through it. And every day it
really
has
healthy.
Yeah, it has to do with our choices.
As a way to be and as not being too attached to even the outcome. So, that we can, I think, you know, it can be hard to explain to somebody that you're an activist and that you can still be happy sometimes.
Right.
Because it's like, well, there's all these problems, you know, how can you possibly be happy? It's like, as you're talking about, you can observe the problems and you can still play your role in rectifying those situations, but you can sort of look at those out, you know, in the periphery of your vision. But in the main part of your vision, you can still hold this really beautiful, healthy, and sort of epic picture of what it is, what we're doing here, what our role is in these times. It's a privilege to be here in these times and be a part of this change that I feel like we're all a part of.
Right. Yeah, I'm finding that the more I think about it, and I'm a real history buff, and I look back on history, to kind of get a feel for the pattern that's happening now. And I think we're living in very, very exciting times because we have made a conscious effort, you and me and so many of the people I'm sure that we both know, that we have become the change. We are going to make sure that that change happens. And I'm even finding that those of the younger generations below me, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 58 years old. So when I'm looking at the younger generations, they're you know, I'm really pleased and proud to say that I know some incredible young people that are just, they're not going to do things the old way. They don't want to do things the old way. They have amazing ideas. And, you know, I keep hearing the term of indigo children, and I think a lot of them are indigos. They are just purely life essence people. I can't think of any other term for them. And
The children of the light, bringing the light, channeling the light here and shining it on. I mean, I think that is partly what we were talking about, that childlike perspective on things. Children are kind of a median. It's like, well, why is it like that? Why does it have to be like that? Why can't we change it? And it's like, well, you know, a lot of adults just can't answer them because there is no reason. There's no reason, like, the tools we have now and the creative potential that we have there are no excuses for how we continue to destroy and plunder the earth for these things that we don't need anymore. It's pretty ridiculous. I love that. I love the idea that it's like this great sort of a cosmic joke on this empire that's built itself up. And it's going to be the kids that bring it down. It'll be little children, absolutely.
You had mentioned anarchism, activism. Tell us a little bit about the anarchism and the ancient social structure. And, you know, I just want to give you my bird's eye view when people say anarchism. To some of the people I know, they have this preconceived notion that these are very angry activists dressed in black. They have bandanas covering their faces, and they like to smash up windows and things like that. Tell us your ideas about anarchism and how that's a preconceived notion and what anarchism really is.
Absolutely. The word anarchism has been sort of turned into this chaos picture. So people, when they hear anarchy, it automatically goes with chaos, people killing each other and, you know, burning things and all that kind of stuff. Anarchism is actually a very ancient and proven, proven social structure by which people can choose to live. And my idea of anarchism, my mantra that I would tell anyone who said, you're just out to smash things up and set them on fire, is that anarchism it's not about no rules, it's about no rulers. So it's about a community.
That's exactly it. And everybody has a say. Like the Grand Assembly, you know, the assemblies in the Occupy movement, you know, everybody had a say. Everybody, it was a self-governing, everybody had a part in it.
So powerful.
I like that personally. I think that worked really well. Till the Occupy movement became co-opted here in this country. I don't know how it is in Australia, but what is your take on that? Do you think that most of the Occupy movements fit the anarchist structure?
I think they're definitely practicing some really interesting, they're bringing into life, some of the practices that would really make anarchism work in the real world. As in, yeah, so everyone has a say. There's a, you know, there's a way of getting feedback for everyone, from everyone. One of the quotes that comes to mind on this topic is from, I think it was an Australian Indigenous chief. And, you know, that makes it sound like, oh, there was a chief, so there, you know, there, it wasn't anarchy or anarchism. But he was told to get your people to leave this land, get them to go. And he said, but if I tell my people what to do, I'll no longer be their chief. So it's that idea of, like, anyone who tries to, you know, rise up and get the scepter of the rule, you know, be the some sort of king, or try to put their power over anyone else, would immediately be told, no, we're not just doing what you say, you know, we're participating in this, we're creating it together, it's not one person's decision. And I feel like that's sort of how it can work now with so-called democracy.
Yeah, direct democracy, which I don't know if you've followed what Iceland has been doing, but they have what's called direct democracy, which means, well, what they did was they kicked the bankers out. They, you know, they kicked them out, and most of them were imprisoned. But what they have done is they have local leaders that actually take on issues, and they conduct their government, democracy with a small d, direct democracy, based on those issues.
Wow, yes. Yeah. See, I think that's so encouraging and amazing. And, I mean, that's one of the main problems that I see, like, such as here in Australia. It's a huge country. And we're
right.
expecting these politicians who may live in Canberra and has you know, its own environment, its own, you know, water catchment, it has all of its own bioregional things that affect it. And
right.
instead of saying, okay, those people can have a say in their region, they may have a say across the entire country. So, which doesn't apply, like, none of the things that they are experiencing apply to, say, Tasmania, which is right, you know, right down the bottom, like, or right up the top where it's desert, or they just, I think it's very unrealistic for us to expect a political system to even work. I don't understand, like, how can Obama possibly cater to everyone across America? It's a huge place. Like, it's so
right. That's
yeah.
This is what I'm thinking, that it's the country's become just so unmanageable as it is, because, you know, the policies that are put into effect don't pertain to many of the people. And then again, it's so based on the two-party system, which is really one party here in the United States, the money party, and all of the Congress and Senate dip their hands in the same pot of money. The corporations fund everything, including the elections. And it's become so corrupt that, you know, again, the people think they're being represented, and they're actually brainwashed into thinking that's true. And nothing could be further from the truth. The corporations are what's being represented. And the corporations are even writing the legislation, which is surprising.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the corporations here are writing the legislation through their lobbyists, and then half of the bills are hundreds of pages long, but Congress votes them in without even reading the legislation. It's just
wow.
like, you know, the blind leading the blind, and and the people that suffer, of course, you know, the Congress people are making money hand over fist with the bribes and everything, but the people that suffer are the people, the regular citizens who think they're being represented, but they're not at all. And mm-hmm. and the truth, and then if I sat there and talked to probably 10 people in my neighborhood, probably 9 of them would not believe me. Maybe 1 or 2 of them would believe me and already know what's going on. So I think that it's a huge Orwellian place that we live in at this point in time, up is down, black is white. It's just... It's, you know, the more I read Orwell, you know, I read his book several times when I was younger. It was required reading. I believe they've taken the book out of school libraries now, even here, because it's being,
wow.
you know, so much of our stuff is being censored. They don't want young people reading that. So, so it's really just amazing how it's all come to how it's all come true.
I think it's an interesting blend of Orwell and also Brave New World, Huxley.
So right.
They're sort of the hyper-controlling side of it, the monitoring everyone's movements and all that sort of thing. But then there's also the side of it of people being lost in the metaphorical drug, the soma,
right.
which is the media, which is the sort of really far, far off track,
right?
The
TV has become, TV. I was telling somebody the other day, they don't call them programs for nothing. Those are programs because they're programming you. You know, they're programming you to think a certain way, to believe a certain way. I was telling my guest last week about the show Revolution, which is a continuing series on television. And a lot of the stuff in it is factual, if there was ever, you know, a civil unrest and breakdown in this country. But a lot of it is extremely violent. So I think this is actually a program to convince people that if you use the word revolution, there's going to be violence attached to it. And I think this was definitely by design, you know, to force
right.
feed in
yeah.
little people. So
potentially the word revolution has been, I feel like the word revolution has been co-opted on from that angle, but also from the angle of like, the marketing, so people talk about revolution, start a revolution, buy these kind of sneakers, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
marketing has become the big tool, and they co-opt so much of the words. Look at the term conspiracy theory, and look at what that means now. It doesn't mean what it really means anymore. They've kind of made up the meaning to think that you're believing in stories that are unbelievable. But what's funny is these stories are believable because they're happening. They're true stories, not conspiracy theories. But somebody else hearing your conspiracy theory or your story will say, well, that's not true. That's a conspiracy theory. Instead of going and looking up the information themselves or trying to educate themselves. And nothing could drive me crazier than that, let me tell you. Because I'll say, well, I've researched it. Have you? Have you looked at it? Have you read this or, you know, watched these videos or looked at what our leaders said about this or whatever? Oh, no. But if that's what you're telling me is a conspiracy theory, and that's the term they use, and they're immediately closed to any other outward thinking about that topic. Completely closed
right.
down.
So even looking into
so
it.
Very, very scary. You know?
Well,
the people that are controlled. These people are controlled because of these terms and what they refuse to believe in. We've covered a lot of ground here. But I wanted to, we're getting kind of close to the end of the show, and we can go over just a few minutes, but I wanted to ask you, this has been so interesting. We'll have to have you on again. What do you see in 5 years or 10 years? What's your vision of, your particular vision of the future?
Well, I draw on, as we talked about, the Indigenous perspective of creation, and permaculture as well provides a lot of inspiration for me in my vision for the future. I absolutely believe that humans can create the Garden of Eden on Earth. I look out my window here and I see so much land that is just cultivated with grass, purposefully kept in a very sort of primitive state of evolution, if you want to look at it like that. These spaces can all be utilized to grow plants for us that are medicinal, that are nutritious, that are organic, that are absolutely reflect the aliveness of what it is to be human as well. We can bring these spaces to life, and I think that and maybe it will take something like you were talking about, that a lot of people maybe haven't experienced the hardship that would trigger them to change. I think if we don't consciously choose in the next few years, definitely within the next 5 years, if we don't consciously make this choice, then the earth itself is going to speak to us so loudly that we just can't ignore it anymore. It's going to say, hey, you guys, pay attention. What are you doing? Why are you doing it like that? Let's change it. And so I absolutely believe we can... That's why it's such an amazing time to be human, is that we have the chance now to create the Garden of Eden on Earth. And your most beautiful vision for the future is that's the seed, and it's going to grow. We're on the way already.
Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, I don't know if you know much about Florida, but Florida's like the land of manicured lawns, watered year-round because of our weather, and golf courses galore. And I pass golf, and I just say, oh, my God, this could be like a huge permaculture farm. It could feed everybody in this golf course community, for instance. Every single person in here would have enough food to last a year. And we have a growing season here in Florida, for instance, of three seasons. We can grow in the fall, the winter, and the spring. We cannot grow in the summer because it just gets too hot. But we have three growing seasons, which are amazing. And there's not too many other places in the United States that can claim that. Maybe California. I'm not sure about California. But I look at that. That's what I look at when I see open space. I look to see how it's used, and more often than not, it's not sustainable. It's not sustainably used. Very.
And it's silly. It's just silly. That's the main thing I look at. I'm like, we live in Australia is the most arid continent on the planet, and we do the same thing. We have lawns and water them. It's so painful that it actually makes me laugh, because it's just so ridiculous. I'm sure it's quite similar. So that really drives me, that vision of, and I think that's something that every person who's listening to this and every person who cares about social and environmental justice can help to bring that into being by talking about it, even when it's not necessarily, socially acceptable to do so. Just bring it up at a party, Hey, why don't we all just plant, our own food right there? Why is this lawn? Why don't we have vegetables growing there, break the silence on those things and point it and use humor and make it really fun and challenge people on their beliefs. And
yeah, you're challenging people, but you're not passing judgment on people, which you know, you're saying, hey, just directing them to think a different way. And I think that's key, is to make people think, okay, I can look at this differently and proceed differently and change the things I've been doing which are no longer working. So there's going to come a time, and I agree with you, there's going to come a time when people are going to go to the store and they're not going to be able to afford a loaf of bread. So what then, you know? So I think that time is coming. I think that time is coming soon, and I think you and me and so many other activists that we know are setting the stage for that, are setting the guidelines for how people are going to move forward after that. But I think there is going to be a time where people on the earth are not going to be able to ignore it. I think we're really close to that. But we're reaching the end of our time, and Emma, I want to give you a few minutes just to make some closing comments and tell people how they can get in touch with you to learn more.
Okay. Well, my work, my films, and my poetry appear on YouTube, a YouTube channel called We Earthlings. And that they're experimental films, so I do a lot of different kinds of things on there, and I'm basically exploring the form of short film as a way of connecting to people. I want to explore humor and poetry and different, so experimental films, basically. One of them that I'm particularly proud of is I do a poem dressed as a giant chicken, and the theme of it is about, it's basically about, well, a lot of people think it's about chickens, but it's actually about humans and rewilding, and it's about taking that character of the chicken and showing how a chicken may be factory farmed and questioning, well, is that what is happening to modern humans in a civilized environment in the office, you know, is that what's, are we being farmed in some sort of way to feed into this industrial machine? What I'd really like to share with everyone is don't be afraid to embrace your most epic self. All of the stories that we tell ourselves about humans, all of the superhero stories, all of those fables that you loved as a kid, they're true and they're about you. You are the hero in these stories, and all you need to do is to step up in yourself, feel your heart and where it guides you, and to embrace that side of yourself, that hero, epic, messiah, whatever you want to call it, side of yourself. You've probably heard it before. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yeah, I believe that too. I definitely, there's no coincidences. I don't believe that there's any such thing as coincidences. We're here on this planet, and the people we're connected to are connected to us for a reason. And I believe it's all based on that, who we're connected to and why we're connected to them. And every person is a learning experience. So, and I'm sure you believe that too.
Absolutely. We are all connected. Yeah, for sure. In so many ways.
Well, Emma, I want to thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight. I want to remind people that we'll be back next week, Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Emma's show is archived as soon as we finish this show. You can go to Wise Women Media blogspot.com, and the YouTube channel with the experimental films is linked there on the complete show description, so you can click right into it and watch her films. And check us out on our social networks, and if you feel compelled to hit up the GoFundMe link so we can keep these shows coming every week. And I'm going to close. Emma, thank you so much. I'm going to play an incredible song right now by an incredible woman named Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, who is the newest jazz sensation out of Miami. She's awesome. And this song is called If This Isn't Love. So until next week, good night, everyone, and good night, Emma. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I've got a little secret, a secret, a secret, a secret kind of secret. I'm aching for to shout it to every daffodil and tell the world about it. In fact, I think I will. If this isn't love, I'm feeling like an apple on top of William Tell Brothers.